4.6 billion.
The Earth forms.
Cambrian.
542 million.
Complex life explodes.
Permian Triassic.
251 million.
90% of species die.
Cretaceous Tertiary.
65 million.
Meteor kills the dinosaurs.
55 million.
Primates appear.
2.3 million.
Pleistocene.
200,000.
Humans appear.
20,000.
Agricultural 250. Revolution. Industrial Revolution.
60.
Great Acceleration.
The Anthropocene.
Welcome to Generation Anthropocene. I'm your host, Mike Osborne. Today we're featuring an interview that Generation Anthropocene contributor Sam Larson recorded with conservation biologist Dr. Leah Gerber. Dr. Gerber works on whale populations. Now, when the rest of us first listened to this interview, we thought we were hearing a Save the Whales story. And honestly, none of us wanted to hear a Save the Whales story. But then we realized we were projecting Save the Whales onto Dr. Gerber's interview. This interview is not about saving whales. This is a story about extremes. This piece is about a scientist caught between two groups who refuse to compromise. And whether you care about saving whales or not, Dr. Gerber's interview is emblematic of a lot of environmental stories. So stay with us while we revisit the whales in 2012.
Hi, I'm Samantha Larson. I'm here with Dr. Leah Gerber, who's the Associate Professor of Ecology in Arizona State University. Thank you for joining me here.
Thanks for having me.
So among the various academic roles that you've had, you were asked to play the role of Scientific Advisor to the International Whaling Commission, the IWC, and your work with whales and whaling has received quite a bit of attention. This is probably because whales have been an enormous figurehead for environmentalism probably since the 1970s. Do you think that highlighting certain charismatic species is an effective way to promote conservation?
I do. In fact, when I get the question, why whales, I definitely didn't grow up thinking I want to swim with dolphins and save the whales. Mm-hmm. That said, I found in teaching at the undergraduate and graduate and even for outreach to kids, it's working on these charismatic species is a really great way to draw people into the sciences, get them hooked on the whales, and then let them know about the microbes and all the other exciting components of biodiversity.
How do you think that it is possible to hunt whales sustainably?
Yes, it is. I would like to think that it's possible, but we need the right institutional structure to ensure that that could take place. And right now, the institutional structure of the International Whaling Commission is ineffective. And in fact, whales are not different than any other wildlife species that we, you know, can use very simple population models that incorporate uncertainty and take into account environmental variability and are very cautious about allocating what can be taken. So I have no doubt that the methodology is there, but the problem is political more than scientific. In fact, I think the irony, and I love to use this quote by Voltaire, the perfect is the enemy of the good, and that is that the landscape of whale conservation is extremely polarized. So we have the environmental groups who are just sort of from a matter of ethics and principle saying it's not okay to hunt whales. And I can understand that. I mean, they're amazing creatures. I've been under the water with them. They're highly social and really, really sophisticated animals. And so, why do we need to take them? When you think about it, there's no real need. And I can understand that the rationale that it's wrong, but not all cultures think that way. So that's one camp. And the other is that they're just, you know, livestock of the ocean. They're another resource for our consumption. And why should we treat them any differently? And furthermore, we have a history of commercial whaling and their commodity in markets. So that's the landscape. And the year before, there was a big proposal that was put forth to compromise and say, okay, how can we get out of this gridlock of where we are now? And where we are now is that, and this is what I mean by the perfect is the enemy of the good. Mm-hmm. The animal rights groups will not compromise at all. So yeah. Even if we use the most conservative models to say, okay, we could maybe take two whales and it's not going to have any impact, population's still going to be fine. No, it's not a population question. It's an issue of the individual and the ethics.
Yeah, moral question.
Right,
yeah.
So they refuse. So that is really, and then on the other hand, the pro-whaling nations don't really want to give, and they don't want to especially give up. Right now, they have a great deal. They just say, well, I object, either like Norway, I object, so I'm just going to do whatever. Or Japan, I'm going to harvest under a scientific permit, and they just take what, you know, they take for, quote, research. And with no restrictions. So right now, unsustainable whaling is happening when if we could just come to a compromise that might entail a few whales being taken while we develop another strategy, that would make a lot more sense. But it's a matter of principle. The perfect's the enemy of good. We won't compromise. It has to be no whales. So we're just going to have unsustainable whaling go on.
Yeah. I guess I've heard you talk about that's the big problem with international organizations is that there's no one that's going to make sure that people uphold what they say they do because, as you said, they can just opt out if they're unhappy with the organization. Do you think there's a way around this?
The solution has to come in effective compromise.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you're familiar, or maybe you're planning on asking me this further on, but one of the most recent things that I've been working on with some colleagues at UC Santa Barbara is this concept of a market. Are you familiar with that, or have you?
A little bit. Conservation science and market approach to saving whales.
Yes.
Recently published in Nature, right?
Yes. Yeah. And so that's one thing that I've been working on, which I love because whales, like other resources, are a common pool resource. So why would someone want to stop whaling when they just can harvest them, they're free? And so this is one approach that sort of takes this idea of sort of a carbon share and brings it into whale trading. So instead of having you may be familiar with catch shares in fisheries, individual transferable quotas, where you sort of everyone's allocated a quota and mm-hmm. you could trade.
Mm-hmm.
But the basic idea is that the quota is allocated in a scientific way, and then we use models, both economic and biological models, to allocate what's sustainable, and then you basically create a market where the market, simple concepts of supply and demand, determines how much a whale is worth. And based on economics, a whaler is willing to sell it at a certain price. And so instead of the conservation groups like Greenpeace and Sea Shepherd going out and tying themselves to whale ships and, you know, doing radical, extreme actions that possibly have negligible, measurable impact on reduction of whaling, this is an approach that if you want to save a whale, you could buy it. You can actually come up with the money, use your resources as a non-governmental organization to take those funds and actually raise money to buy whales in the market.
Yeah.
So the glitch is that the whalers will need to agree to sell, which I don't foresee as being an issue.
It seems like they would want to sell. I mean, that's why they're in the market
exactly.
to start with.
Right. Right. So it's a market. So they're not losing. Yeah. But it's theoretically the conservationists could buy all shares. So there's no whaling. But it's, you know, possible that in this scheme, they'll still, you know, depending on what's happening with the market, there'll still be some harvest happening. And so that's the issue of contention. We floated the idea in Nature, and it got a lot of attention, as you may imagine, from the press and from the environmental groups. The biggest criticism of it was about the ethical end of it, and largely that whales are sentient beings, and it's unethical to put a price tag on them. And it would be akin to slavery, putting a price tag on a human. And that to me just sort of goes back to the perfect is the enemy of the good. So maybe we disagree with this philosophically, but from a practical standpoint, is it going to solve the problem, or do we want to let this unsustainable wailing continue? I spent some time in response to those comments talking with a colleague, Ben Mentir, who's an environmental ethicist, to try to tackle or dig deeper into those criticisms about the ethical components. And we're developing an essay on this, looking at the whale share case study in the context of really a dichotomy in the conservation movement between viewing nature and resources as something special or unique or that we have to protect and preserve, compared to sort of this new ecosystem services. It only has a value if we assign it a value, and how this sort of plays out. And the upshot is that it's not either or. We could set up a market to solve the problem, but we can also advocate from an ethical standpoint, we shouldn't even have any whaling.
Have people gotten into, if you're making the ethical standpoint, then it's like a gradient of what species are suddenly not sentient beings?
And... Absolutely. That's a really interesting question, because why whales are sentient compared to cows?
Uh-huh. Or, yeah, you know, I mean, cows are holy in some cultures, right?
Exactly. So that's another issue that I think looking at respecting the different cultural perspectives is really important here. You know, I wouldn't do it if I didn't feel like there was hope. I mean, it does get exhaustingly complex with all the political sides of things. And when I started working in this realm, the realization that, you know, even doing the best science and bringing it to the commission and saying, you know, here's what the data say, here's what we should do, that doesn't necessarily determine policy. There's a lot more that goes into it that is beyond, distinct from the science. I do feel, although I haven't cracked it yet, I feel optimistic that we'll come up with something workable within my lifetime, mm-hmm. that'll get us out of this.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for taking the time to join me here.
Of course, it was very fun. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Science-based policy, like the quota system proposed by Dr. Gerber, is meant to bring reason and logic to conservation debates. Was it the right solution? I don't know. But it was refreshing to see someone thinking outside the box, trying to break through the gridlock. It's the kind of thinking we'll need as we tackle bigger issues today, whether it's whales and rainforests or mass extinction and climate change. After all, butting heads doesn't seem to be getting us very far. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to this episode of Generation Anthropocene. We want to thank all of the students and subjects who contributed to this project. And you can find the full-length interviews at our website, stanford.edu/group/Anthropocene. Thanks to Maserati for letting us use their song Monoliths. A very special thanks to co-producer Tom Hayden for feedback, guidance, and inspiration. Thanks also to Julie Kennedy in the Earth Systems Program. And thanks to KZSU Studios Stanford, where all of our interviews were recorded. History is accelerating, and you're a part of it too. Where would you draw the line?